Thank you for listening to The Walt Weekly with your host, Walter Latham Sr., and co-host, Michelle Sweeney McCombs. You can find us at www.thewaltweekly.com. On social media, Instagram, The Walt Weekly, Facebook, The Walt Weekly Podcast, Twitter, Walt Weekly, and Podbean, The Walt Weekly. You can also find us on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Pandora, and other streaming platforms. Please like, follow, and share The Walt Weekly. Welcome, everyone, to The Walt Weekly Podcast. We celebrate Women's History Month. Today's special guest was born on the island of Dominicana in the Caribbean. She grew up in the Bronx, New York. She studied opera singing in Rome, Italy, and debuted at Carnegie Hall. Please welcome Marie Claire Gerard, also known as MC.
Happy Sunday. My name is Marie Claire Gerard.
Welcome, Mary. MC, you, yes. How would you like to be addressed? MC or Marie Claire?
MC is fine.
All right, yes. So going forward, we will pronounce MC. MC.
Yes.
All right, MC, I want to welcome you on behalf of the Walt Weekly. We are really privileged. And we are somewhat, surprised that we have an opera singer on our show. I mean, you have really pushed the boundaries of what we cover and what we try to give back to the community. Right. And I'd like to thank you for that.
Absolutely. You're most welcome. Yes. Thank you for having me, both of you, Walter and Michelle. Thank you.
And thank you for joining us for Women's History Month.
Yes, absolutely.
Appreciate that. Yeah. Thank you. So can you tell us your humble beginnings?
Okay. I was born on the island of Dominica in the Caribbean. It's a little island. Approximately about 70,000 people. It's very small. It's between Guadeloupe and Martinique. And my mom moved my brother and I to New York when I was 4 years old. And I grew up in the Bronx, New York. But she brought us back every year to Dominica. So we never lost touch or contact with the island.
Awesome. Okay. I mean, do you carry dual passports in a situation like that, or
I do have two passports. I have I'm a U.S. citizen, but I also carry a Dominican passport as well.
Well, I'm surprised you're here with the COVID. I mean, do they have you have an outbreak
in Dominica? No, we haven't had any deaths, but there's only been like 15 outbreaks since this thing started. So I mean.
That's great.
Kudos to the Prime Minister for doing a really good job. But nowhere is really accepting U.S. citizens right now.
I'm trying to say, since you've been on the show, maybe we can go down to Dominica.
We are persona non grata right now.
We can't run. We can't hide.
No, you can't. There's no way. No one will take us.
That's for sure.
Oh man, what goes around comes around.
Exactly. So, what inspired you, and how old were you actually when you found your voice and you knew what type of music you wanted to do?
I was in my last year of studying archaeology at Brooklyn College, and I was working at Tower Records in New York.
Oh, good old Tower Records, yeah.
Oh my God, I miss the record stores. And one of my coworkers who became to be one of my lifelong best friends, Anna, she was hosting this band from Texas, a blues band, And before that, you know, working at Tower Records, I was exposed to like Ella Fitzgerald and Sarah Vaughan and Patsy Cline. Oh, yes. All these amazing singers.
Right.
And I just started to emulate them, started singing just like them and learning all these great, from the Great American Songbook, from all these great composers. And Anna says, you know, you have a really great voice and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, she's my friend. So, you know, she's going to say these kind of things.
Right.
I thought, you know. And so on the night that she was hosting this band, you know, she had me get the sheet music of Peggy Lee's Fever, which I learned. And she plied me full of tequila. I got up on stage. She got the band to get me up on stage. I sang Fever. And it's like I breathed for the first time.
Wow.
It's like I was awake for the first time. It's like I saw colors for the first time. It's like that was it. And I could not go back.
That's incredible.
To what I was before, because singing became music. Singing became my everything.
Wow. Now, did you grow up with music in the home, or it was just when you were working?
We always had music. I mean, calypso from the Caribbean.
Right.
Soca, reggae. My uncle loved music, so we had Earth, Wind, and Fire in the house. Mm-hmm. I started studying classical piano at a very young age. So I loved music, you know, and I thought everybody could sing, because I was always put in the choir with all my other friends, and I went to Catholic school. So I thought everybody could sing, you know, but I found out that's not true either.
Right.
Maybe the opposite.
Wow.
And so I discovered this, that I had this huge voice, and Ella Fitzgerald still is my favorite singer.
Amazing.
Still is.
Amazing. Yes. So, you know, you studied opera, obviously, in Rome, Italy, and you debuted at Carnegie Hall. How exciting, and how did you feel about going? I mean, this is Carnegie Hall is like it, you know. How did you
Carnegie
feel?
Hall, I mean, when they say practice, how do you get to Carnegie Hall? You know, practice, practice, practice.
Right.
And indeed, I was practicing. And on my return from Rome, I started studying with this amazing bass baritone, Raymond Buckingham. Mm-hmm. And he knew Vincent LaSalva from the New York Grand Opera Company. He had me audition for him. And I got in, and he had this concert like four times a year at Vile Recital Hall at Carnegie Hall. And he put me on the bill. And it was absolutely, I mean, to sing on that stage, and I couldn't stop smiling. I mean, I was smiling so much, I got a headache.
Yeah. You can hurt your face smiling so much.
Exactly. It was, I just felt very, very accomplished, very, very proud, and thinking that everything would be a meteoric rise from there. But that was literally just the beginning.
Right. Yes. I mean, you have so much talent. Like, you're able to mix your operatic vocals with other genres of music, which is exciting. So,
oh my God,
not just
that is
opera.
So great.
That's wonderful. And hard to do. Like, most musicians can't do that.
I mean, I don't, in my mind, I don't really think anything. I think if you can think about it, if your mind can perceive it, then you can make it happen.
You can achieve it.
You can achieve it. Absolutely. Right. So when I heard, I grew up in the Bronx, so this grew up around hip hop, not really listening to it, but it was around me all the time. So, It just seemed to be like it just seemed natural to me to layer my operatic vocals on top of hip hop. And it is such an explosive, wonderful thing.
Yes.
It just raises the bar, you know?
Right. Exactly. It's
fantastic. Exactly. I love doing it. And it freaks me. When I tell people at first, you know, I mix, you know, opera and hip hop, they're like, what? You know? But then when they hear it, they're like, oh my God, that's fantastic.
Yeah, definitely. You don't hear that quite often. You just hear R&B singers mix in with rap. So, your voice is just phenomenal. I met you a few years back when...
That's right, yes.
You were rebranding. You were branding yourself and, you know, just followed you from then and just admire your career and your strength and just the fact that you kept up with it. You know, even during the down times, you were always proactive with your career. You made a name for yourself. You know, you're very active in your community. You know, you give back to the community. Can you tell us a little bit about that with yourself, with young adults?
Well, I like to, there's a couple of schools around where I live, and it's not a huge outreach. It's very small, but I like to show kids that opera singing and classical music, it's not just for the highbrow or for the rich or for white people. It's accessible to any and everyone. And so I show them how in the music that they listen to, in R&B and in hip hop, classical music is there. So what I do is, like, I play them a hip hop track, you know, I played for mm-hmm. them. And then I let them know that this is actually a piece of classical music is looped within that. And then right. I take away the hip hop track and I play them the classical piece and they love it.
Awesome.
Wow, that's it. It is awesome.
And
they
amazing.
Love it. And it's like, you can do, this is not just, you know, the media and society, they put all these preconceived notions in our kids' heads, you know, which is absolutely ridiculous. You know, right. music is music.
Right,
and if
exactly.
it's good music, it's good music.
It's good music.
You know,
mm-hmm.
it shouldn't be one genre of music shouldn't be barred from someone just because of their race or where they grew up. That's ridiculous.
Yes,
it's
that's
open
right.
to, it's open to everyone and anyone.
Right, right.
And if you like it, listen to it. If you want to play it, learn it. Anything
exactly.
is possible.
Right, right. It's music. It's universal.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah. So you're also a composer. You collaborated on a song with Pulitzer Prize winning composer John Harbison. How?
Oh my God.
How was that? You know, can you tell us about that?
I
know that must have been the highlight of your career.
I mean, Michelle, everything in my life has been about, you know, I really believe that I've been destined to do this because I do not come from a family with money or with a family with connections or anything
right.
like that. So everything is like divinely inspired. You know, God has
right.
put me on the path of where I should be, where I should go. I listen to him constantly, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I pray
mm-hmm.
to him constantly. And he always puts me where I need to be.
Right.
And so on this particular day when I met John Harbison, I was at this coffee shop across the street from Juilliard. I was having a lesson at one of the adjoining buildings. And there was a gentleman standing in back of me online. And you know when your spirit, it just calls out to another person? There's just
yes.
a vibe there between you and this person.
Right,
and
right.
And we just started talking. He was like, what are you up to today? I was like, well, I'm rushing to my lesson, but I'm starving. He was like, you know what? I'm rushing. These students are playing my music over there. So I'm going to go over there and hear the rehearsal. But I'm so hungry, I had to get something to eat. I was like, I hear you, me too. And he said, what type of voice? He said, what type of voice are you? I was like, well, at that time, you know, I'm a contralto, which is the lowest female voice, but it's also the rarest of female voices. And he was like, oh my God, there are no contraltos around. He was like,
yeah,
give me your contact,
right.
give me your contact number, and give me your website. I'm
going to
check
wow.
it out. Then he I didn't know who he was. He gave me his card, you know. Then he emails me like a day later. He was like, oh my God, your website is exactly how you are, Mary Claire. You know?
Fake.
And he said, you know, somebody should write you a song cycle. Then he's like, you know what? I'm going to write you a song. Then the next thing, I'm going to write you a song cycle. And you just write the lyrics.
Oh my God.
And he's been, John and I have been friends ever since. He's been one of my mentors ever since.
Incredible. That's
yes.
faith. Yes.
Absolutely.
That's so awesome. So I'm going to let Walter come in now. If you have
okay.
any questions you'd like to ask her, Walter.
Well, I think she addressed every question that I had.
Sorry.
But I wanted to ask you about, you know, who are some of the artists that influenced you? And you said you discovered your voice. So,
yeah
it wasn't one of those things where you looked at some of the soprano contraltos within
mm-hmm.
opera. Could you name another contralto?
Yeah.
That maybe we would know?
Marian Anderson.
Ah, okay.
Yes.
Because it's such a rare voice.
Yes. Marian Anderson broke ground, and she was the first
mm-hmm.
Black woman to sing at the Metropolitan Opera House. She broke
right.
racial barriers. I mean, she was just incredible. But since that time, it seems like I am not a contralto. I'm a lyrical spinto soprano.
Whoa.
And
could you
and
repeat that?
Voice, I am a lyrical spinto soprano, which means that even though I have all these high notes, I have great depth and warmth in my voice, which can make it confusing to people, which makes them
right.
think that I have a lower voice than I have.
You got a tremendous range then. Wow.
Yes.
Yes, you do.
Yes.
Now, what about Leontine Price?
Oh my God, Leontine.
Yes. Correction. Yes.
Leontine Price is like, I mean, I get chills. She is just the best.
Yes.
I mean, when you think of, you know, Valhalla and Olympus, she's right up there with the gods.
Yes. That's what I wanted to ask. Yeah, of course.
She is a beautiful diva in every sense of the word. I mean, not like the way the word diva has been so watered down now. I mean, she's
right.
Just the truest sense of that word, a voice that is so just gorgeous. I mean, when she made her debut at the Met, the next day, the New York Times, she was on the front page of the New York Times, and they said, and I quote, Leontine Price's voice is like the flag unfurling in the wind. Wow. It's just waving there.
Yeah.
You know? In just gorgeousness. Yes.
Voice. Yes. Beautiful woman.
Yes.
Beautiful woman.
Okay. You received some awards. Are you still affiliated? First, are you still affiliated with the UN as far as
your
projects for children?
Yes, I'm still affiliated with the UN. I have not been in contact, well, since the COVID thing, I have not been in contact with them. But I would still do things with the UN, of course. And anything for children, absolutely.
All right, and I see where you were recognized by the NAACP, the City of New York, and New York State Senate. Oh, that's awesome.
Yes.
Yeah, giving back.
I really believe in giving back. I think that's truly important because no one, whether you're an artist or you're a business person or whatever you strive to do in this world, no one does it alone. You can't do it by yourself, you know, especially if you want to do something like entertainment or Michelle and Hare, any sort of anything in entertainment, you there's no way you can do
it
alone.
You need a team.
It's too hard.
It's too hard. Can't do it by yourself.
You can't do it alone. So you always need those people that are going to encourage you, uplift you, support you, and give you that helping hand in whatever way, shape, or form.
That's right. Whether or not it's your vocal, your vocal coach, down to your hair stylist, makeup artist.
Exactly.
Yes. Definitely. I totally agree with that. Yep.
Everybody creates the team. You need a team. Like it takes a village to create, to make, to raise a child.
That's right.
It takes a village.
It definitely is. Yeah, it does. It does. And it does.
Very true.
And faith.
Very true.
Faith.
Oh my God. You cannot.
That's
that
right.
That word, faith, you know, during this whole pandemic thing, nothing has struck me more than that saying. It's not in our time, but it's in God's time. We all have our time. We all have our time, and we as human beings, and me included, I'm guilty of this. You know, we're very anxious. We want this now. You know,
this
is how we want to get it. We never know how it's going to happen, right? And we never know when it's going to happen. But what can we do? We can get up every day. You know, we can pray. We can give thanks.
Right.
We can study.
That's
we
right.
can prepare, mm-hmm. you know, so that when those
That's
opportunities
right.
come, we're ready for it.
Yes, yes.
Because I feel that God gives all of us talents and gifts, but God needs help too. You know, He can't do everything.
No.
You know, we have to prepare ourselves and be ready for when He says, okay, now's the time.
Now's your time. And you better be ready. That's right.
That's right.
You better be ready. So what do you have coming up? I know, how is COVID actually impacting you? I know you've performed in small venues, you know, during COVID when it reopened, resurfaced, but how have you been maintaining?
I've been maintaining, well, thank God I'm able to collect unemployment, which is a blessing. Thank God for that.
Right.
But I've been doing performances. Actually, one of my performances is resuming today at Dante's on McDougal Street. I'm there every Sunday starting today.
Oh, awesome.
From 4 to 7 every Sunday.
And that's in the city?
Yeah, that's on Dante's at McDougal Street, on McDougal Street.
On McDougal, awesome,
awesome.
Yes, and so me and my guitarist, Greg, we do jazz standards for those 3 hours. And it's so much fun. You know, just to be with the public.
Definitely have to come and see.
Yeah, you got to try to make that, Michelle.
Yeah.
Yes.
I live so far from
I didn't
the
know.
City.
Like,
yeah,
go to right, Michelle, I'm not too far.
For me, if possible.
Yes. Walt is in the sticks. He's in the sticks.
Yeah, way out here.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
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 Definitely.
And our younger legs, too, so.
So is this a long-term residency you have there? Or
it's a long-term.
Awesome.
It's a long-term residency that they stopped it, you know, when the city was on lockdown.
Right.
They stopped all indoor dining. But now that we're open back up again, they called me and they want me back.
That's great.
Yeah. So we're starting back today, Greg and I, and we're going to be there every Sunday.
Awesome. I'm definitely going to come out and see you.
And I wrote a musical during COVID. I wrote a musical.
Really?
Entitled Charcoal.
You see? Uh-huh. Yeah, absolutely. That's what you got to do. We have been encouraging all our people to reinvent yourself or pick something that you're not that you've never done.
Right.
And do it.
Right. And do it. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Absolutely. So Charcoal is a song that I wrote. Oh my God, Charcoal is a song I wrote a very long time ago. And I always knew that that it was something that could be more. What exactly more was, I had no idea. But a few months ago, I was with my teacher, and we were in class with some of his other students. And I was having a very difficult time doing a passage of music vocally. And, you know, I could not understand why I could not do this. And I realized that my traumas, even though I had dealt with them, I had only dealt with them on an extremely superficial level. And
right.
I realized that unless I dealt with these things that were blocking me, I could not move forward. So I reached out to a few friends of mine. And one friend in particular in London introduced me to her therapist. And since I started working with Kenny, it's like, you know, you have a block, you know, something is wrong, but you don't know what to do. You don't know how to get around it. You don't. And Kenny enabled me. He gave me the tools to unlock the doors that had me locked.
Wow.
And since that happened, my creativity has just been, it's been like a waterfall, an avalanche.
That's great.
And so Charcoal is about this baby girl that is born into a coastal African village, albino. In 1619, at the dawn of slavery.
Oh, wow.
Her family, her tribe, want to discard her, throw her away, because anything seen as different is deformity, and anything that is other is not looked on as a positive, is looked on as a negative. So then before they can discard her, the priestess from outside comes in and says that, no, don't discard her. I will raise her. I will love her. I will teach her of the ways of the spirit world, of the ancestors, of the spells, of the magic, of everything that exists in nature. And so to make a long story short, while she was collecting herbs one day, jumped 20 years, she's now 18 years old, she gets captured by slavers. Without them seeing her, she gets captured. So at the Virginia slave block, when they finally see her, they're like, how are we going to explain her to anyone, you know?
There's
charcoal ash at her feet. And so they start to mix charcoal ash with oil. And as they put the oil mixed with charcoal on her skin, she starts to chant. And as she chants, the charcoal becomes her skin color.
Oh, wow.
And she stays, that color forever. Wow.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
And she doesn't grow old either. She stays like that, preserved like that. And that's what I'm going to say.
Awesome.
Yes.
Awesome. So what platform do you plan on bringing that out on?
Oh, it's gotten a lot of interest. Even some high level producers in Hollywood want to back it. And right now it's with my editor that's making the final revisions of it. And I'm going to the studio next week to do some demos of the songs, because it's a musical. And so hopefully to mount it on Broadway or some theater by the fall, if we're still opening up.
Right. So, okay, you have the quote unquote Hollywood, right? So, you know, Hollywood likes to make things. When it comes to the Black community, they like to change things the way they see fit for us. Do you have full creative control on your project?
Well, I wrote it. It's already I'm copyrighted by the I already had it copywritten by the Library of Congress. So Charcoal is mine. And I feel that the way the landscape is regarding our people, regarding like when you see projects such as Jesus and the Black, is it Judas and the Black Messiah?
Judas and the Black Messiah,
right?
Harriet, When you see Billie Holiday versus the United States, when you see all of these things coming out, all of the television programs that are on now, I mean, I feel that charcoal is going to be just fine.
Awesome. Great. Yeah. I hate to see that because, you know, Madam C.J. Walker made, when that Self-Made, when that came out, there was a lot of fictional stuff that they added into it. So.
Okay. Was that the one on Netflix?
Yes. Self-Made. Okay. Yes. Okay. Because the great-great-granddaughter interviewed, and she was stipulating that she didn't have creative control. She was just allowed to read the script, and then she didn't see the final script. And when they made the changes, a lot of it was fictional.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So that's why I asked that question. I just wanted to see if you, you know, had input and, you know, actually the, you know, that you own it and everything, but the development of bringing it to Hollywood, how much of a, are you going to have your hands in that part of it?
Well, I want, I want to be with it in every step.
Great. Awesome. Because I hate when they tell our stories and then they want to change it to what they think it should be. So awesome.
No, and
congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you, Michelle. Thank you. Yes. It's going to be fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
I can't wait for that. How long did, how long do you foresee it for the future? Like, do you see it coming in the next year or two?
No, I think by the fall. Charcoal is done.
Amazing.
And it awesome. It took me about 2 weeks to write this down. It was in my head, fully formed and just ready. And we're just working on the music and putting it into a play musical format. And it's good to go.
So being that, you know, we have this COVID stuff going on, things probably won't be in full force for a while. Do you think that it'll be on Broadway or some virtual format?
I think if I think that depending on what happens with Broadway and COVID, it might be a movie.
Awesome.
Yes.
That's great.
For Netflix? You're going to go for Netflix?
I'm going to go with whoever is willing to have charcoal be its truest form.
Okay.
I think, now is the time. I mean, we have a lot of stuff coming out about our histories you know, just have to take advantage of it. And Hollywood is opening up. They have no choice. Yes. You know, people want to hear, we want to hear our stories.
Exactly. And there are enough of us with money, with studios, with this and the other that
there you go.
Our stories can be heard.
And congratulations on that.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I do want to mention this critique that you received from the Huffington Post. They say, and I quote, "With her unique voice, shook my world when I heard her." And this is a reporter from the Huffington Post that critiqued one of your shows on Broadway. And that's amazing. For someone to say that you shook their world, man, that's just an amazing thing.
Yes, it wasn't on Broadway. It was actually probably at Joe's Pub where I perform every year. Yes.
Yeah, and it's the Huffington Post. And for them to say that, that transcends a lot of places, regardless of where you were.
Right.
Exactly. For them to even publish something, you know, to that effect about you.
Joe's Pub, that's a famous place also. So
Yeah, it is.
That's awesome.
You know, I never heard of Joe's Pub. Where is that?
Really?
It's at the Public Theater. It's with the Public Theater downtown on Lafayette and Astor Place down there.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yes.
All right. And I got my editing cut out for me on this little songstress.
There you go.
Okay. All right. That's my North Carolina accent coming out, I think.
That's okay.
I digress.
I had to put that in there because that's amazing that you affect someone like that, especially a critic. That's amazing.
So I know you're on a short time frame. I believe we covered everything, but if you want to add something right now, feel more than welcome to add some more because you have to get yourself together to leave out.
I think I would like to add to young people, especially Black children and children of color, brown children, that any dream is possible. That if you have a dream, don't let it go for anyone. Pursue your dream, study, work hard. There are no shortcuts. don't take the shortcuts because you only have to go back and redo the work probably twice as hard. Do the work and just keep moving forward. Mistakes are not a bad thing. They're a good thing because with mistakes, we learn. So make your mistakes, fall down, pick yourself up again, study hard, and never give up on your dream, ever.
Amazing. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.